from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Red, white, and blue are the colors we most often associate with the 4th of July. But in the hour ahead, we're going to talk about the role another color plays in 4th of July festivities, gray, as in charcoal gray. We're going to take up the subject of outdoor grilling, how to perfect thick, smoky barbecue flavors for steaks and ribs, or how to grill lighter fare, vegetables, even tofu and fruit. And we'll tackle the really big barbecue questions like charcoal versus gas, sauce or no sauce. We have a panel of chefs and food writers standing by, so get your grilling questions ready. It's Forum's 4th of July guide to outdoor cooking after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. For many, the 4th of July holiday weekend has already begun. Take off Friday, add in the fact that the 4th conveniently falls on a Monday, and a nice long weekend stretches ahead. And high up on the list of anticipated weekend festivities is the 4th of July Outdoor Food Fest. So in this hour form, we're going to help you plan just what to cook and how to cook it. Say you want a barbecue. And by the way, barbecue can be a noun, by the way. So say you want barbecue. How do you get that best smoky flavor? Is it sauce or smoke or spice? What kind of meats are best? And for those of you who are less red meat oriented, we'll also go over the basics for more simple style grilling too, from fish to vegetables, even tofu and fruit. And we'll tackle the great environmental debate too. Is outdoor cooking an environmental no-no, or is there a green way to grill? It's the Forum Outdoor Cooking Guide, and we're going to open up our phone lines right away so that you can phone in with whatever grill questions or barbecue questions you have. Here's the number, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, forum at kqed.org is the email, kqed.org/forum is the website. Let me introduce who we have here to answer all of your questions. Eric Markoff. He is the chef at Anchor and Hope in downtown San Francisco on Minna Street. He also developed the barbecue program at the Town Hall Restaurant. Eric, good morning.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Joining us as well is Amanda Gold. She is the food writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. Amanda, good morning.
Hi.
And Chris Ying is here, too. He's editor-in-chief of Lucky Peach Quarterly, which is a new journal of food writing published by McSweeney's, also has spent some time as a line chef. Chris, good morning.
Morning.
Happy to have all of you join us this morning. Let's start out by talking about what to cook as you're thinking about the 4th of July. Let's say, Eric, you want to you really want to have that sort of traditional smoky barbecue flavor. Where would you think about – what would you think about cooking first?
I mean, for me, ribs comes to mind first. Ribs are a nice pork butt to do pulled pork sandwiches or something like that. That's where I go. I go pork.
And what do you have to think about when you're going out and shopping? Do you want to get the highest quality meat you can, or is barbecue something that sort of covers up the ills of a lesser quality cut of meat?
I mean, I think that's where barbecue started, you know, those lesser cuts, as you called it. Now, you know, people are looking for – it's important to people, no hormones, no additives, you know, how the pig or the cow is raised these days, and I think that's personal preference. Me, I go no hormones, no additives, things like that. From there, I start thinking about what kind of spice rub, my flavor profile, and things like that.
Okay, so let's move ahead, and then we'll get in some other alternative choices as well. But let's say you're doing ribs. What's your choice for how you go about preparing them?
My personal preference is St. Louis style ribs. They're a little fattier. They tend to be a little juicier with the finished product. Baby back ribs are good. They tend to be a little drier. So.
And with St. Louis, is that something that's like marked on the label? It says St. Louis style ribs, or
yeah,
how do you
most
know?
People
how do you
know
find
them
it?
As spare ribs?
Okay,
but you can tell they're a little thicker. They're a little bigger. Yeah, that's my personal preference.
And then what do you do to get them ready for the grill? How do you prepare them?
You know, me, I brine them for 24 hours. Then I'll put a spice rub on and let that sit for 24 hours. And then I hit the grill.
So you got to – if you're each separately, so this is a 48-hour, so that means you got to start, you know, tomorrow afternoon if you're going to go that route for the 4th of July on Monday?
Yeah, I think the great thing about – barbecue, smoking, grilling, all those things. It's personal preference. That's how I personally like to do my ribs. You can take a rack of ribs, open it up, throw it right on the grill. You can throw some spice on there and throw it on the grill. That's just what I've learned to do and learned to love over the years of grilling and smoking.
Eric Markoff, the chef at Anchor and Hope. Chris Ying, what are you thinking about doing for the 4th of July?
I think the 4th of July is a pretty good time to get ambitious. You know, everybody's going to be grilling anyway, and, you know, you don't have that many Mondays off. So if you can get everybody together and you're going to have a barbecue, you might as well do something that you wouldn't ordinarily do. So I guess Monday is probably a little late to be still formulating this plan, but I think Monday we're roasting a pig in a caja china, which is this... I think Cuban, do you know? I think it's a Cuban-style box where you would roast these pigs rubbed in sour orange juice and things like that.
This is literally whole hog.
I'm gesturing that it's like a big hog. But yeah, it's going to be like a whole, maybe like a smallish hog, not like one of those prize hogs, but, you know, like a big pig. And you just put it in this box and you cover it up with this metal lid and cover it in charcoal. So I've never done it, and this is going to be an interesting experiment for the 4th of July, I think.
And how many people do you have to consume that particular
meal? Just two. Just me and my girlfriend are going to eat this pig. No, I think we need a lot of people. So, you know, if you want to come over to my house on Monday, we're going to have a pig. No, I think maybe 40 people or something.
And how much space do you need? I mean, you have to have a backyard. I mean, this is not something for the apartment dweller.
Yeah, it's... probably need more space than I have. But, you know, that's also like an impediment to a lot of barbecue in San Francisco, that and the weather, is having open spaces for these big projects and things like that. But, you know, the nice thing about this box is that you don't have to dig a big pit in your backyard or anything. You just have this contained thing. So I hope my little backyard patch will be enough space for a pig and 40 people.
All right. From ribs to the whole pig to Amanda Gold. What are you thinking about?
I'm going to go completely opposite here. I'm all about the last minute. You know, figure you can't – it's hard to plan for barbecue in San Francisco because you never know if the fog is going to roll in and kind of obliterate your nice outdoor party. So I kind of see how the day is going and then, you know, maybe invite over some last minute people and so I'm all about thin cuts of meat, you know, things that can cook quickly on the grill, like chops are great. We'll probably do lamb chops on Monday. You know, get kind of nice Mediterranean flavors in there, some lemon, oregano. Can marinate it before, but doesn't need too much. And, you know, that'll cook quickly. Lamb chops will cook on the grill in 4 to 8 minutes, probably.
So how do you prepare them? This is obviously not the sort of St. Louis-style, heavy-duty, smoky sort of flavor that Eric was describing. What do you do to prepare them, and what does that wind up yielding?
Well, you know, a lot of things, if you're using just a thin cut that's just going to pick up those nice flavors from the grill, you need little more than olive oil, salt, and pepper. And, you know, if you want to go a little further than that, you can do a spice rub. Like I like on chops, I like a harissa paste or, you know, kind of a Moroccan chili and cumin spice rub. That works really nicely. And all you have to do is kind of rub it, or you can do a quick marinade and then, you know, maybe half an hour before you're going to throw it on the grill. And then just, you know, grill it for 4 to 8 minutes or however long it takes.
Amanda Gold, the food writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, joining us along with Chris Ying, editor-in-chief of Lucky Peach Quarterly, the new journal of food writing published by McSweeney's, and Eric Markoff, the chef at Anchor and Hope in downtown San Francisco. And we'll open up our calls to you if you have a question for any of our chefs or food writers about how to proceed this 4th of July, the kinds of things you're thinking about cooking and the questions that you have about that. You can join us now at 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. Here's an email already coming in. It's ironic that the subject of grilling comes right after the hour you had on clean air vehicles. We always hear not to grill on Spare the Air days. In the long term, how does the pollution produced by grilling compare to other activities, fireplaces, and so forth? Are there things we can do to reduce the impact of grilling without giving up this tasty tradition? Amanda, you've written some columns about this question.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think in general, it's not going to be great. You know, whether you're doing a gas grill or a charcoal grill, your stuff is going into the air. That's not going to be great. But there are definitely things you can do to kind of cut down on those. One is, you know, if you have to do charcoal grilling, gas is better. If you have to do charcoal grilling.
Gas is better from an environmental standpoint or from a culinary standpoint?
From an environmental standpoint. Charcoal tastes better. But from an environmental standpoint, you know, if you're going to go with charcoal, try to use something that's natural. Try to use something that's not soaked in lighter fluid. You know, the lighter fluid, when it's burned, it emits these VOCs. And there are volatile organic compounds that go into the air. And, you know, those are the bad cancer-causing compounds that go into the air. So you want to cut down on those. So natural briquettes, things that are not soaked, natural wood briquettes, natural charcoal, that's kind of what you want to go with.
And there are other things you can do, too. I remember reading in your column about using, if you're going to use paper plates, you can get them made out of recycled material.
Absolutely. You know, they have the bamboo plates or they have the, you know, potato, the forks and spoons made from the potato, and anything that you can do to not be using the plastic that you're throwing away to reuse, that's the way to go.
Chris, where do you come down on the charcoal versus, of course, you're doing a whole pig, so maybe this isn't relevant, but where do you come down on the debate between charcoal versus gas, taste versus environment, I guess?
You know, I don't think that taste versus environment is an easy battle to win on the taste side. Not really morally ambiguous or anything, but you know, I prefer to use charcoal. And then when it comes to, you know, thinking about the environment and you know, the way you grill, I think the best solution is, like, I don't think you can tell people to stop grilling, but you should make the most of it. Like, lighting a grill, having a barbecue is kind of a pain anyway. Like, getting the barbecue out, putting your parka on for the warm San Francisco summers. You know, getting charcoal, lighting everything, you know, it's like you should have a plan for what you're going to do and really make the most of this occasion. And so, you know, you shouldn't just light a grill so you can grill two hot dogs and then just let the charcoal smolder and waste them and pollute the environment. So I think that the best plan is to have a plan for what you're going to do. You know, I've spent too many barbecues huddled around like a battery operated grill or like half a bag of charcoal lit and waiting for one hot dog to slowly warm. So I think that if you're going to do it, you should just do it wholeheartedly and take public transportation to your friend's barbecue, I guess.
Sort of like building up a few chits on the side so that you can still enjoy the grill. Let's get to some of our callers who have questions already. David, go ahead. What's your question, please?
Your first guest talked about brining ribs for 24 hours, and I'm wondering exactly what that entails. And but before he answers your environmental topic, I have two grills. One of them, if I close all the air holes, the charcoal will go out, and I can use that same charcoal for three or four barbecues.
Yep. Yeah.
The other one is not so efficient, and once you start the charcoal, it's going to burn out no matter what you do. So that's one way to address the issue.
Yep, David, thanks. Thanks for adding that pointer. Eric, on David's question on what's involved in brining ribs.
Brining is just another way to tenderize the meat. What I do is I'll heat up some water, just regular water, and my preference is garlic, bay leaf, peppercorn, a 2-to-1 salt to sugar ratio, and that just helps impart flavor into whatever.
So when I think of the word brine, I think of salt, but it's obviously a lot more than that. What else? Repeat if you would. What goes into the solution?
It's salt, sugar in my brine. I like garlic in there, juniper berry sometime, bay leaf, peppercorn,
and salt to sugar 2-to-1 ratio.
Yeah, more salt than sugar.
All right. And now to Kevin, who joins us in Knoxville, Tennessee. Kevin, you should have some good barbecue recommendations for us. Go ahead.
Hi there. I live in a condo, an apartment-type condo, and because of fire rules, we're not permitted to grill outside, even using gas. So what I'm going to be doing on the 4th is taking a pork tenderloin, and I'm going to smoke it in a stovetop smoker first. Then I'll finish cooking it off very slowly in the oven. And then at the end, I'll toss it on a grill pan to get those charred marks, because I discovered that the char, that really burnt, bitter flavor, is key to good cue. So,
all right, Kevin, thanks.
That's yeah. the way I'm going to manage with living in an apartment.
All right, thanks, and not bad advice for sometimes living in the city of San Francisco as well, where you have to do a few things indoor.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
All right, Kevin, thanks. Thanks for your good luck on Monday. That brings up an interesting question about doing some things indoors and then taking it outdoors. Can any of you comment on that, about sort of baking something ahead of time and then just doing the last bit, the sort of finishing on the grill?
Sure. I mean, I really like that technique. I like the idea of braising something off or cooking it slow first and then chilling it and then portioning it and then grilling it. I think that that's more in line with the way a lot of restaurants work, where you don't just take a raw piece of food and grill it and then put it straight to the plate, which is what happens at a lot of our backyard grills, you know, because you decide, hey, it's the one sunny day of the year. I'm going to run down to the market and buy some bell peppers and flank steak, and then I'm going to throw it on the grill. But if you have the time, I really like the idea of cooking things first, you know, and making grilling one technique among others in like a completed dish.
And is that true of any kind of meat? I mean, you'd like literally like bake a steak before you would put it on the grill?
I mean, I think that for a steak, sure, I think you would just salt it the day before and then throw it on the grill the day of. But, you know, I like the idea of doing things like, you know, braising slow-cooked meats, pork shoulder and things like that, or brisket, and then letting them chill, cutting them into slices, and then finishing them on the grill so you can get that charcoal flavor if you can't spend 18 hours smoking and barbecuing meat.
Mandy, you want to chime in on this as well, especially as you were saying, for if it's a typical cold, foggy day in San Francisco in particular, there are ways of sort of going where Kevin was going, which is achieving most of it indoors, maybe just sort of dashing it out for a bit of flame at the end.
Right. Well, I was actually going to say I've kind of done it the opposite way sometimes, where I've taken, you know, a whole tenderloin of beef and gotten that nice char on the grill first and then finished it in the oven. Because I'll do that, you know, sometimes if I'm doing the entire thing indoors, I'll do that on a pan first to get the nice crust and then finish it in the oven. So if you can get that flavor on the grill, that's one good way to do that. So I think it works both ways.
Here's a question about pork shoulder. I wonder how your chef would make a pork shoulder over a mesquite fire. What do you use as a rub? How do you keep it juicy? I'm having both a green egg, I'm not sure what that means, and also a traditional smoker. Which would you recommend? So I guess those are kinds of smokers, green egg or traditional smoker, Eric?
I'm not familiar with the green egg.
Yeah, it's kind of a big ceramic, you know, you can do a
green
bunch of things
looking egg.
Yeah.
So on the preparation, mesquite, he wants to do a pork shoulder. What would you use as a rub? How do you keep it juicy?
Once again, I would brine it first. I'm big on the brine. Gets the salt in there, tenderizes the meat a little bit. And then for pork shoulder or bone-in pork butt, I like a lot of brown sugar, a little bit of cayenne pepper, salt, black pepper, a little bit of dry mustard works well in there. I let that sit again for 24 hours with the rub on there. And I like to use different kinds of wood. Mesquite is good. I always throw in a little alder wood when I smoke.
So these are things you add on to, or, well, this is smoking, not on the grill. Okay.
Yeah, well, if you're outside with a Weber, you can get your grill going with charcoal or this wood. And then the great thing about it is you can throw wood chips on there to impart more flavor and different kinds of flavor.
Neil writes in, my brother just cooked a whole pig. It was awesome. But where do you get a whole pig? Chris?
This is going to be useless for people who don't have friends who happen to be able to get you whole pigs. But I asked my friend who runs a restaurant to order me a whole pig. But I bet you if, you know, wherever you are, if your town has a good butcher or like a butcher shop that you're familiar with, you can go in there and ask them, provided that they're like a big-ish butcher shop that can hold a whole pig for you for a day or two. But, you know, special orders and things like that, I think, is the best way to go. Asian markets are willing to do almost anything for you. So
you know what else? I just heard at the county fairs, they have these the auctions, you know, the 4-H. They do the auctions. So you can go buy a whole pig.
Chris just mentioned Asian. Are there – let's talk about some other sort of alternatives. You were talking about being ambitious at the beginning, Chris. But are there ways to add in Asian sort of fusion-style approaches to barbecue that can give you a kind of completely different sense than the sort of St. Louis style or the caller we had from Tennessee?
I think that Asian barbecue is maybe like Korean barbecue or Japanese style yakitori lend themselves really well to that last minute type approach, you know, because the Asian barbecues tend to use these clean burning charcoals that are just for the heat and just for that grill flavor, as opposed to trying to impart a lot of smoke and things like that. So
you're cooking before and then just putting.
You would just take some natural charcoal and grill chicken skewers, you know, and that would be like the same thing that, you know, the Japanese would eat as yakitori. So having those clean, just pure flavors of meat is a pretty Asian thing to do, I think.
And what's involved in preparation for that, Amanda?
Well, I think, you know, like he said, there's you just are going to grill those skewers, but then a lot of yakitori things are about the sauce after. And so, you know, you're getting kind of a nice soy or lemon based sauce that are just really simple, easy, you know, like a miso garlic or a lemon soy, something like that, that you can then dip those meats in after. So it's really very little preparation beforehand. You know, again, maybe just some salt, pepper, olive oil.
I always think of barbecue, again, old-fashioned barbecue, being all about sauce, Eric. But is that not the case? I mean, can you achieve what you want to achieve without sort of saucing everything up?
It depends where you live in the country. Memphis, not a lot of sauce. It's about the rub and the smoking process. Kansas City is generally a very sweet, thick sauce. South Carolina is vinegar-based. So I think it's a personal preference. It's what you like or what you grew up on that is the sauce. Good, properly smoked meat or grilled meat doesn't really need a sauce. If you've done it right and the quality of the meat is good, you know. I see sauces as covering up things. Like if it's pure and done well, then you don't necessarily need a sauce on it.
Eric Markoff, he's the chef at Anchor and Hope in downtown San Francisco, joining us along with Amanda Gold of the San Francisco Chronicle, Chris Ying of Lucky Peach Quarterly. Newell Post writes in, please stop talking about St. Louis-style barbecue. I lived there for nearly 10 years, and there were very few barbecue places there, and the ones that existed were terrible. Most of them served barbecue with a side of spaghetti, and there was no difference between the sauces. Kansas City has good barbecue, not St. Louis. Yeah, Eric?
when I was speaking about St. Louis, I was referring to the cut of the
meat.
Rib.
Okay.
Not necessarily the style of barbecue in St. Louis.
Trish writes in, Amanda, we just got a big green egg, a smoker grill. Have used it only once. Do you have any advice for novices using a big green egg for chicken, steak, hamburgers, vegetables?
Well, I have to say, I don't actually own one, but I know a few people who have gotten them and become instantly obsessed because you can pretty much do everything in there. But the stuff that I've had off there that have worked really well, pizza, there's, you know, it comes with kind of a slate inside that you can get really hot. And so you can bake bread on there. You can bake pizza. You can, you know, so it's kind of some different kind of preparations. I think a pork butt would work great in there too, because it kind of holds in the heat.
How much time is involved?
Slow and low in there.
Is this a long time process to use one of these?
Not necessarily. I'm pretty sure that it's wood burning and it depends. You can kind of trap the heat in there and you can cook something really for a really long time, or you can get it up to high heat pretty quickly and do something right away. So I don't think it takes too much time.
All right. We have to take a short break. And when we return, we'll talk more about cooking and what to do for your 4th of July barbecue. Here's the number if you want to join us and pose a question to our panel of food writers and chefs. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org, forum@kqed.org. When we come back, we'll talk about other kinds of things you can do on the grill, including vegetables, even tofu, what to do about corn, something people frequently want on the 4th of July, even fruit. We'll get into that as well. 866-733-6786. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, what to grill on the 4th of July. Eric Markoff is the chef at Anchor and Hope in downtown San Francisco. He joins us along with Amanda Gold, food writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, and Chris Ying, editor-in-chief of Lucky Peach Quarterly, a new journal of food writing published by McSweeney's. We're going to get another butcher on the line in just a bit to give us some other advice about the kinds of meat to pick out and what to do with it. But let's take a couple of more calls before we get to that. Stacy in San Francisco. Go ahead, Stacy.
Hi, my question actually takes you kind of away from the grill but to the side dishes, because I typically end up getting invited to barbecues. And I'm just wondering if there's suggestions for generic barbecue side dishes that would be easy hits, regardless of what's being thrown on the grill.
All right, Stacy, thanks. Amanda, to you.
So we're saying that does not need to be thrown on the grill, right?
Right, exactly.
Okay. Well, one of the things I always love to do in summer is a panzanella salad. You can take some stale bread, cut it up, and with some fresh tomatoes and basil and maybe some onions, and, throw that all together. Everybody loves that. It holds really well because the bread kind of soaks up the dressing, and so it's okay if it sits for a while. That's one thing that I really like to do. I also like to do roasted vegetables, because you can kind of serve those room temperature if you want to. So that's always very easy. And yeah, really, grilling to me says salads. So any kind of salad is always welcome. And nobody really likes to make a salad when they're having to make everything else. So that's always a nice thing to bring to a party.
Chris, what do you want people to bring to go along with your pig?
I always think the best side dish for a barbecue is a 12-pack of beer. Or, like a cocktail or sangria or something like that. I'm one of those people who, when I have a barbecue, I like to do everything myself and do all the side dishes and things like that and not hassle people to bring stuff. So 12er of beer, it's the best one.
Pretty soon you're going to be giving out your address. Peter in Mill Valley has our next question. Peter, go ahead.
Hi, thanks, Dave. Thanks for taking my call. Great shows. Actually, I'm driving down Highway 1 in the city. And traffic is moving well on 19th Avenue. I'm driving in my Prius, which I just found out is worth much less resale value. But my question is, for years I've done salmon all the time on the gas grill, and I want to know how you get the crispy exterior with the properly cooked interior like you get in a good restaurant such as Il Fornaio or something like that. So what's the secret?
Okay, Peter, thanks. Eric, can you help out?
I think it's the proper temperature and timing of it. If your grill isn't hot enough, you're not going to get that good crust. If it's too hot, obviously you're going to burn it. So I think it's getting that proper temperature. Make sure your grill is nice and greased and oiled and clean, and that'll help get some char on the salmon.
Amanda, what's your secret to doing salmon in the right way?
Yeah, I think temperature is huge for sure. One of the things that I like to do, kind of my weird trick, is right before I'm about to put the fish on the grill, I like to spray it with non-stick spray, which if the grill is really hot, it kind of almost seals up right on the grates. And another thing someone told me once is to break the stick right away. So, put the piece of fish on the grill, mm-hmm. and kind of get a spatula under there right away. And so to prevent that initial stick, because, obviously if it's sticking all over the grill, then you're not going to get that nice crust.
And how long would it typically take to get that perfect blend of what you want on the outside and well cooked on the end?
I wouldn't cook a piece of, a fillet of salmon. I wouldn't cook for more than 5 or 6 minutes.
Stephen also writes in about the question of getting this sort of right balance. His question is, some have said that the importance of timing in cooking is critical. I've read that the problem with cooking is that the heat dries out meat because moisture evaporates, and the longer and hotter you cook, more of the moisture escapes. So how long should meats be cooked in order to achieve the right balance of moisture and flavor? So that's the trick, right, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, people, when talking to people about how we cook things in the restaurants, for me, I can't really give them a time, because it's all about how big of a portion you're cooking, what are you cooking. A 16-ounce steak is going to take a little longer to cook than an 8-ounce steak. So things like that, it is timing and temperature. I like a really hot grill. You get a good sear on it, you get that char on it, and then it's really just experience and honestly screwing it up a few times to kind of figure out, cooking is repetitive. So the more you do it, the better you're going to get at it. And the more you'll understand, you know, timing and temperature and things like that. When it comes to barbecue, the slow and low is kind of my mantra on that. You know, nice, low temperature, 225 degrees, you know, and patience.
Can you be that precise with a grill? I mean, I think of 220 being something you'd monitor on a stove, but on a grill you can really...
You know, we have these really amazing thermometers out these days that you can actually scan the heat of outdoor grills. Now, indoors, using smokers and things like that, it's all digital and it's thermostats you can set it to, so it's a little easier.
Let's get another meat expert on the line with us. Ryan Farr joins us. He is the owner, chef, and butcher at 4505 Meats, does grilling of meat at the Ferry Plaza in Embarcadero on Thursdays and Saturdays, and also offers butchery classes in Hayes Valley in San Francisco. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
You got it. Definitely. Thanks for having me.
We were just talking about the secret of not drying things out too much. Give us your tips on how to do that. One thing I know you suggest sometimes is baking some before you actually get it to the grill. Is that a way of keeping the right amount of moisture in the meat itself?
Well, yeah, it's about controlling the temperature. And just like we were just saying there, cooking at 225 on your grill, Eric was saying that, is a great way. But what we have done in the past, and have a recipe in the book that's coming out, where we grill it or put it in the oven at 250 for about 45 minutes. We're talking about like a 3-inch ribeye or porterhouse. All steaks I like to keep about 3 inches or about 3 fingers in width. So you can cook it for a real nice long time, either on the grill smoking, or what we were referring to here is in the oven till it's about a temperature of 135 internal. Then I'll take it out and finish it on the high heat on a grill and get a lot of that good caramelization on the sides all over it. So then the fat down, when I say fat down, just over the hot coals so we can get some caramelization of the fat and all that flavor develops.
It sounds like you're a proponent of big meat, right? When you're saying you're talking about steaks that are several inches thick, so the bigger and fatter the better?
For me, for the way I like to cook, yes, definitely. But, I mean, at the same time, if I was going to do something that's thinner, like a flank steak or a skirt steak, I want to have a little hotter heat on the grill and have a more direct heat, which was basically right over the coals opposed to the indirect, which would be in your in a low oven or a smoker. In that case, then I would definitely want to have, you know, wood underneath the meat and just get a good sear on it, and then once I get a good sear, just kind of take it off the main part of the grill to the side and let it kind of carry over a little bit more.
Ryan Farr, the owner, chef, and butcher at 4505 Meats. Ryan, give us you referenced your book. If people want to find out more about what you offer and some of the ways in which to go about making the meats that you're describing, how do people find out about that?
Well, we have a book coming out in the fall. I guess I have a book coming out in the fall called Whole Beast Butchery. And what we're doing is about 500 image step-by-step of breaking down a whole beef, lamb, and a pig. And it's all focused on the butchery technique. And we do have, there's a good amount of recipes in there, and we refer to grilling. And it's just, it's a book that I wish that I had when I was learning to how to butcher, because I'm really self-taught and did everything in restaurants as a chef.
All right.
Dealing with the whole animals. So.
Ryan Farr at 4505 Meats. Ryan, thank you. Other resources that people could turn to if they feel like they need to do some quick reading up before they embark upon the 4th of July. Chris, you're at McSweeney's. What are your favorite resources along with your own journal?
Harold McGee's books are, and Harold McGee is a local guy. He's the...
For the New York Times.
Yeah,
right.
And he's the culinary godhead. I think that chefs and home cooks alike should all pick up on food and cooking and all his books. And he's a great resource for all the basics. And he'll teach you to temper your meats before you put them on the grill. He'll teach you to make sure you rest them after they come off the grill. And he'll give you every little bit of science about why to do those things.
Favorite resource, Eric?
You know, I think I'm more of a visual person than a reading person, and YouTube is amazing. You can pretty much find anything cooking-related, butchering-related on YouTube, and and you can actually see it. You know, there's a lot of things on there, step-by-step butchery, step-by-step cooking.
And do you have from your restaurant, are there, do you, like you've been describing how you go about brining and your favorite rubs, mm-hmm. are those available from the restaurant or from your website?
For sale or?
Well, no, just if you want to,
No.
Just come in and talk to
you. Come in and talk to me. I'll tell you how to do it. I'll show you.
All right. Amanda, what about you? Where do you turn for
favorite
resources?
Well, the Chronicle, of course. No, you know, in all seriousness, we write at least three times a summer about grilling. And so we have covered everything from ribs, chicken, vegetables, tofu, fish. And, you know, so if you go on our recipe database at sfgate.com, you can find that all there. I also, you know, there's tons of cookbooks out there. So...
And back to our calls. Mike in Berkeley joins us next. Mike, go ahead.
Hi. I have a great tip for cooking corn, which is that buy the corn on the cob, obviously, but still with the husk on. Cut off the tip of the husk right at the tip of the cob to get rid of all that stringy stuff on the end, and submerge the cob in a bowl of water for a couple hours and throw it right on the grill and let it cook still in the husk. And what happens is the water in the husks will steam the corn and keep it moist, and it's very hard to burn the corn that way. I wouldn't put the cob right on open flame, but it's very easy to do. It's my favorite way to cook corn.
All right, Mike, thanks. Now, you go huskless, right? Didn't I read in one of your columns, Amanda, that not to go with a full husk approach?
I've gone both ways. it kind of depends on what you want to do with it. I mean, I like that nice char on the kernels, so it kind of depends on what you're looking for. Again, you know, Eric talks about personal preference, yeah, I mean, I like going straight on the grates, and then, you know, some nice flavored butter.
Some people wrap it in foil. Not necessary.
It's, you know, you're basically steaming it. You're not grilling it if you're doing that.
And to Marv in San Carlos. Marv, go ahead.
Hi. Hello there.
Yep. Go ahead. You're on the air, Mark.
Hey, I was wondering if you have ever used the Japanese Kamado.
All right, we'll find out. Anyone familiar with that, the Japanese Kamado grill?
No? I think that's similar to the green egg. It's like a big ceramic grill. That's just a wild stab in the dark. No, I think it actually is. I think it's just like the big green
egg.
It's like a ceramic grill that, and the idea is that it holds in all the heat better because ceramic is a good retainer.
Marv, sorry. That's one where we're not going to be able to provide much more information than that. Sorry about that. Terry in Novato is next. Terry, go ahead. Yep, you're on, Terry. Go ahead.
Okay. I've used a trick over the years where I'm a little bit limited on time to start. I'll use a stovepipe pot to start my charcoal, but I'll put the one piece of paper in, and then I'll grab the little propane torch that I used in the shop for soldering.
Terry, I'm sorry, Terry, you're breaking up, so we can't quite get all that you're saying. But this has to do with, I think, the question of how to start your charcoal fire and using starters. That's another way you can be more environmentally conscious, right?
Yeah. We were talking about the chimneys earlier, I think, on the break. And that's you never want to use lighter fluid. I mean, it's bad for the environment. I think you can taste it on whatever you're grilling, mm-hmm. personally. And the chimneys are just, you know, you get a little paper, you put your environmentally friendly charcoal briquettes in the top of it, and you just, you know, you let it do its thing.
And you can join us if you have questions about anything else having to do with grilling as we approach the 4th of July holiday. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. We haven't talked much yet, Amanda, about things like tofu, which some people will do, fruit. What are some other things that you can add into this besides meat that you can add onto the grill?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, extra firm tofu holds up really well on the grill. And so you know, a lot of people think that tofu doesn't have that much flavor, but you throw it on the grill and you get that nice, that smoky flavor from the grill. So I think anything that, you know, you can rub it with olive oil, salt, pepper, maybe some spice, throw it on there and serve it with some vegetables, and you have a nice vegetarian meal. Fruit's another thing. It depends on the type of fruit. Stone fruit, peaches, apricots. You're basically caramelizing the natural sugars in the fruit by putting them on the grill. And so one of the other things I like to do is pineapple. I'll grill that and brush it with some melted butter and a little bit of brown sugar and maybe a little bit of rum. And that's kind of great.
There was a column in the New York Times the other day about this whole environmental grilling question. And the writer's point was actually the worst thing you can do environmentally actually is to bake a pie because of the amount of energy it takes to run a stove for an hour. So they were pushing the idea of grilling fruit and putting it on top of
ice cream.
It's
a very quick dessert.
I really like grilling peaches. And then we used to do it in this restaurant where I cooked. And we would find these peaches would always stick to the grill. And I found, here's a neat tip. You can cut a raw russet potato in half and rub the grill down with the surface of the potato before you grill a peach.
I'll have to try that.
And how long do you have to grill a peach? I mean, does the fire have to be a lot lower with the fruit?
I think have the fire be pretty high so you just get that caramelization. I mean, peaches are so good raw anyway, and it's not like you need to worry about cooking your peach to medium rare or anything. So just,
and the peach is right on the grill.
It's right on the grill, yeah. And just don't touch it until you're ready to take it off the grill, I think.
Back to sauce. Ben writes in, the best way to barbecue is to make your own sauce. Barbecue sauce is made of ketchup, mustard, brown sugar, and liquid smoke, and whatever unique flavor you want to add. I caramelize onions and carrots. Any sauce tips, Eric?
Yeah. He mentioned liquid smoke. When we were developing the barbecue program at Town Hall, my sous chefs, we read a ton of barbecue books. And every sauce called for liquid smoke, which is kind of cheating to me. So what we used to do was we would smoke our pork butt or our ribs, and we would take a tray of ketchup and put it down at the bottom of the smoker. So you get all the drippings of the pork fat, and you get the smoke into the ketchup. So you're essentially making your own smoked ketchup in there. And, of course, the pork drippings are always nice in there, too. It gives it a nice meaty flavor.
Amanda, any other sauce preparation ideas that are easy to put together that you like?
Well, for me, you know, another good cheat is I always use smoked paprika in my sauce because that kind of gets that really nice smoky flavor without doing anything.
So this isn't paprika?
It's smoked. It's pimenton, smoked pimenton. And it's just really nice on a lot of things. But you can use it in a dry rub, but you can also throw a little bit into the sauce too.
And to Helene with our next question in Oakland. Helene, go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. We tend not to eat much meat, but when we do buy it, it's grass-fed. And we find that the meat is drier. So we're wondering if there are any suggestions on better ways to cook grass-fed meat.
All right, Helene, thanks. Anyone?
My personal grass meat always tends to taste a little grassy to me, grass-fed meat. I like corn-fed meat. That's a personal preference, but they generally corn-fed cattle are generally finished in its last days of life with grass. So I think it's just your preference of what kind of meat, grass-fed meat versus corn-fed.
So it's not so much how you cook it.
It's the beef itself. I think it's their diet. I mean, their diet imparts flavor.
Anyone else want to weigh in on grass versus corn?
I had dinner one time with some ranchers from Estancia, which is a Uruguayan grass-fed beef producer. And they were saying, well, first of all, they serve like a raw beef sashimi. So like that's one way to go. But another way is they were saying that because grass-fed meat doesn't have quite as much fat as corn-fed beef, and actually as Americans, we all grow up eating corn-fed beef and probably prefer it. I think a lot of cooks prefer it, definitely, because it's what we know. But when it comes to grass-fed beef, they were saying, you know, you cook it a little slower with a lower temperature than you would corn-fed beef, and you can cook it a little further than you would corn-fed beef. You wouldn't necessarily always cook grass-fed beef to medium rare. You would cook it to medium or, you know, heaven forbid, medium well.
Zane in San Francisco. You're next, Zane. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm cooking ribs on my barbecue tonight, and I was wondering what a good recipe was.
All right, Zane. Thank you. It's good to get a youthful cook involved.
Yeah. Oh, you're looking at me.
Yeah.
I think just a really simple dry rub on your ribs, some brown sugar, salt, pepper, little paprika, cayenne pepper. Just let it sit on there as long as you can before you put it on the grill, and just make sure your grill is not really, really hot, because it's about a 3 to 5 hour process. So the longer it's on there, if it's on too high of a heat, your meat will tend to be a little drier.
And do you want to review again, if you would, Eric, the rub that you talked about? Just what are – break down those ingredients again.
Sure. It's brown sugar, salt, pepper, a little bit of cayenne pepper.
In kind of equal amounts, or
it's kind of hard to go. It's kind of hard to go wrong with these things.
Yeah.
I mean, I think salt is the biggest thing you want to make sure you have in there, and then you know, definitely not as much paprika as salt. But, you know,
and if you like spicy, a lot of cayenne. If you don't like spicy, you know, hold back on it.
Yeah, yeah. Zane, does that answer your question? Anything else you want to find out?
That's really helpful.
Okay.
Just be patient with them.
All right, Zane, thanks. Thanks for joining us. And let's go next to Jeremy, who joins us in Orlando, Florida this morning. Jeremy, go ahead. Jeremy, are you underwater? Are you there, buddy? All right, Jeremy, call back. We'll be happy to get you back on if we can. Taylor in Portland, Oregon is joining us now. Taylor, go ahead.
Yeah, about this.
Are you with us, Taylor? All right.
Sorry about that. Here I am. Yeah, I was going to talk a little bit, especially the girl who just called in about the ribs. Another great way to keep your meat moist is to cook it along part of the process, and then put some apple juice or beer or some other beef stock, whatever it is, and then wrap it up in foil, and then finish the cooking that way.
Okay, Taylor, thank you. You're breaking up a little, so we're going to let you go, but I want to go over what you're suggesting. So I'm not sure I'm getting the order on this right. So he's saying cooking and then putting liquid.
You know, basting with some kind of liquid.
Or maybe he was hard to hear. Maybe he's talking about finishing them in a braise was kind of with
– Oh.
I'm
so maybe going in the order you were talking about, cooking on the grill first, then putting some juice
or
something.
Yeah, and with ribs too, I mean, by all means, throw them in a low oven after you get them off the grill while you're – having the rest of your party.
Here's a vegetable question for you, Amanda. I do fine with meat, but I'm wondering how to go about barbecuing vegetables. What spices and rubs to use?
Well, you know, the nice thing about living here is that we have these incredible vegetables at our fingertips, and you really don't need to do that much to them. And, you know, it's why we grill too, because you don't need to do that much in general. So I like to, make sure when you're cutting vegetables to expose as much surface area to the grill as possible. And salt,
so cut them in a way,
cut them flat so that they'll lay flat on the grill. And olive oil, salt, pepper. I mean, I know I keep going back to that, but you really don't need much else when you have beautifully fresh vegetables and a hot grill.
Here's some other herbal advice. About 40 years ago, when Julia Child reigned, she gave some good advice that requires a few months preparation, but it is good advice. When you prune your herbs, set aside the woody and twiggy parts to dry. Use the dry twigs when you grill food. Toss herb twigs into the fire as the food is finished so that that aromatic smoke can pass over the meats and vegetables before you remove them. Sounds like an interesting thing to try.
The other thing you can do is if you have really woody stems, you can use them as skewers, like rosemary stems.
And that imparts a little bit of that flavor?
Yep.
Ken writes in, I've never braised a cut of meat and then grilled it, or I guess the question is, have you ever braised a cut of meat and then grilled for extra flavor? Sounds like meat would be overcooked, but I would give it a try. I'm not quite sure where we're going there.
So that was what I was a proponent of earlier. And the way you can make it work is, sure, you can't take a piece of meat that's come straight out of a braise when it's falling apart and tender and throw it on the grill because it'll just fall through. But with any braise, if you chill it overnight and leave it in the fridge, the fats and gelatins will congeal and you'll have something that you can portion into slices or something like that. Or another cool thing to do, and this would work for vegetables too, and I like this technique a lot, is using like a fine mesh strainer the same way you would use a pan over a stove. So you put something that's loose or falling apart, or if you have vegetables that are cut small, you put it into like a fine mesh strainer and you hold it over the grill and use it like a stove, and then you get both the benefit of a stove and that direct heat.
All right. Jeremy is back with us, trying again from Orlando. Jeremy, go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering if you have any suggestions of beer recipes on the grill other than beer canned chicken.
Okay, beer recipes. Anyone have any favorite recipes that use beer in preparation? In Wisconsin, we used to boil brats in beer before putting them on the grill.
Yeah, I mean, you know, beer is a good marinade. So you can do like a whole flank steak. You can put some spices, you know, maybe some cumin and oregano and garlic on there and kind of marinate it in beer and a little lime juice. That's a great marinade.
Here's the opposite kind of question. Desi writes in, I'm pregnant in my third trimester. I've had so many diet restrictions. No raw eggs. Meat can't be rare. No alcohol. I'm not even sure if charcoal is okay. What's a woman supposed to do to celebrate the 4th of July? Anyone know what would be a good meal for Desi on the 4th of July?
I mean, I think once you're at that point, you know, you obviously don't want to be eating rare meat off the grill. But yeah, I mean, anything goes.
And let's squeeze in one more quick question, if we can. Michelle in San Rafael, a real quick one, please.
Hi there. Somebody called in and asked about a recipe for ribs. And a really nice way to do ribs is to first boil them in coffee for about an hour and then rub them with a nice barbecue sauce mixed with orange juice and let them sit and then put them on the grill for about, you know, 15 minutes to heat up.
All right, Michelle. Thank you. Yeah, thanks. We've started with ribs. We'll end with ribs. What do you think of that notion? Coffee and orange juice.
Interesting. I have used coffee or branches from coffee trees or coffee plants in my smoking before to smoke pork. And it imparts a nice little flavor. Her technique is new to me. I'd be interested in trying it.
Yeah, sounds interesting.
Last quick bit of advice, Chris Ying, for people on 4th of July?
I just think that people should experiment and, like I said, get ambitious. Use coffee to braise your pork ribs and things like that.
And Amanda?
Yeah, absolutely. Just get on there and grill. And don't be afraid to mess things up because you still get the nice grill flavor.
Amanda Gold of the San Francisco Chronicle, Chris Ying from McSweeney's and the Lucky Peach Quarterly, Eric Markoff from Anchor and Hope. Thanks all very much for giving us your wisdom for this 4th of July. Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, Amy Machado, and Tina Lorberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Dan Zoll is our senior editor, and Raul Ramirez, our executive producer. Happy 4th of July, everyone. I'm Dave Iverson. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.